good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Effingham Talks. I am Tommy Morgan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Frank Norris. We are broadcasting from the lovely Stillwell Pines, located just outside of Springfield, Georgia. If you're looking for a venue for your next event, you can find them on the web at www.stillwellpines.com. Look them up on their Facebook page, Stillwell Pines Event Venue, or give them a call at 912-665-2631 for a personal tour of the grounds. On today's episode, we are joined by District 3 Effingham County Commissioner Jamie DeLoach, County Clerk Stephanie Johnson, Guyton Pet Lodge owner and Beulah House co-owner Russ Dean, Effingham Navigator founder and president Pauline Shaw, and Walt Lawson, elected Effingham County Clerk of Courts. Thank you all for joining us today. Only a few more days before Thanksgiving. This year's flying by. Let's get started with Commissioner DeLoach. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today, Commissioner DeLoach.
Thank you, Tommy.
Let's start off by having you tell us a little about yourself.
I was born and raised in Clio area. So I've been here most of my life. I lived in Atlanta for a little while after graduating from Georgia Southern. I've mostly been in banking my whole career. I'm a commercial banker at Ameris Bank. And about 11 years ago, I decided to run for a county commissioner. I have a wife, three kids. All three attend Effingham County school system. My wife's a math teacher at the high school.
Okay. All right. So how'd you get interested in running for commissioner?
Well, I think it really started when I went through the leadership program through the Chamber of Commerce. And since going through that program myself, I've always encouraged anyone who hasn't gone through it to go through the course, because it really gives you a sense of the county side, school board, industrial development authority, all the cities, and it really gives you a real good high level view of how the government entities work together. And so that's where I started getting interested in that. And kind of the person that I previously ran against, I thought there were some communication issues between his office and the citizens. And I had a few people tell me, well, hey, why don't you run? Yeah. And I was shocked. I said, really, me? And they were like, sure. So I thought about it, talked it over with my family, and I decided to run. And here I am 10 years later.
I'm glad to see you in that spot.
Thank you.
We understand that there's a current moratorium in the county. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah. We decided to do a moratorium on all new rezonings outside of AR1 and AR2. And the AR1 is land that's 5 acres or more. AR2 is less than 5 acres. That typically has to, those two zonings typically deal with family property being split up. So we didn't want to stop that. So what we're realizing is we're having a lot of requests starting to come through that we really didn't have a box for anyone to check. And so we also are starting to see some previous developments that there were some things we didn't like about it. So we knew we needed to press pause and try to come up with some new ordinances, try to change some details on some of our current ordinances to hopefully help out with that going forward. The current moratorium is set right now, I believe, to expire on February the 6th of 2025. And what our intent is not to shut things down, but to help us get more quality projects, more quality commercial districts. We're introducing overlay districts throughout the county for certain special areas that we think we may would see commercial growth. And what we want to do at the end of that is we're wanting to put together like a 12 to 15 person steering committee. Let them look at what we're trying to do and make sure that has a real world application. So for example, we've already had one engineer point out something on our Effingham Parkway commercial district, is, and it's the part where we're suggesting how the sidewalks are put in, the vegetative landscape along the highway. We know we want it to look nice, but one thing we did not take into account is a lot of the areas along Effingham Parkway has 8 to 12 foot elevation. So we know what we're trying to do, but the way we have it written today is not going to work. So we've got to go back and update that.
Okay. Is this a new concept to the county?
We've actually had a moratorium, I believe, two other times that I can think of just while I've been in office. I know in the past we did it for 6 months, and then we came out of the moratorium. And just like previously, we had some areas that we wanted to change some zonings. It gave us time for staff to get together, then come back to us, present ideas, and then we were able to make some changes and go forward. But the important part, or what I think of the moratorium is it really gives our staff a chance to look forward. If they're currently fielding applications in on a daily basis, they don't have time to look at, hey, what do we need to change? You know, how can we make things better? Because they're so busy with current applications coming in. So we tried to put this in place to try to help everybody out, the whole team, try to come up with some good solutions going forward.
Okay. Who was the lead on the idea? Was it the county manager, Tim Callanan, or was it a commissioner?
That's a good question. I really don't know if there was any one person that led it. We had had several workshops, and it was just brought up that, look, you know, there's a lot of changes we need to look at doing. And I would say it was kind of a decision as a collective group that we decided we probably needed to do a moratorium.
Yeah. And what was the feedback from the project managers involved in this on the moratorium?
I think it's good, just from my opinion. I think they understand that it's helping them out as far as having time to think proactively about the future and what we're trying to do. We've talked with other community partners. We've explained to them what we're trying to do. I actually had a conversation with a lady in my district who is on the Savannah Home Builders Association, and I believe the Georgia State Home Builders Association. And, you know, communication goes a long way. And when I let her know that we're really trying to improve what we have to make things easier on both sides and to come out with a better product, she understood. And there's been others we've had the same conversation with as well. I mean, once we let them know we're trying to improve our system, they understood.
Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about something a little fun here. We understand there's some recreation projects in the works. What are some of those projects?
Well, that's a really good question. We are currently about to do about $12 million worth of recreation projects. I know one includes the Clio Community Center. We're doing an upgrade to that facility. We're doing an upgrade to that park, to the actual ball field. We're adding a pavilion there. Highway 119 is going to get a full facelift. We're actually going to add paved parking to that, because if anyone's ever out there watching their kids or grandkids, it is a nightmare. Sometimes you get trapped in because the way everybody parks, and it's hard getting out. Another project is going to be phase two at Clarence Morgan. That will, at Clarence Morgan Ballpark, that will be 7 multi-purpose fields. Even before Mr. Clarence passed away, he had already said that he thought phase two needed to be multi-purpose fields, just because of all the soccer, football, even now lacrosse.
Yeah, thinking ahead.
Yeah, that's something new that's coming up. So a lot of our regular baseball, softball fields, their outfields never really get rest because there's somebody on there all the time. So we're hoping this will help out. So phase two will have to be done first before Sand Hill. Sand Hill is going to have major upgrades. I know of at least one additional multipurpose field that may be added there. There may be a second, but we are going to have to create the capacity at Clarence Morgan because we're going to have to temporarily shut down part of Sand Hill to be able to do that work there. Baker Park has got a big upgrade coming to it as well. We actually have 4 pickleball courts that will be added there. That is really taken off in the area now, and it's even younger kids and older folks playing, and it's really, we're getting a lot of response on that. A lot of folks are using the gym at Clarence Morgan to play pickleball, and so we're starting to incorporate that in some of our other upcoming recreational projects. The last big one that's just coming to mind is the Atlas project.
Yes.
I will say Commissioner Forrest Floyd has done a really good job. Ever since I got in 10 years ago, we've talked about that property. We always wanted to use it and make it some kind of asset. We've got over, I think it's around 350 acres there, and I believe it's right around 230 something acres of water surface there. So I never realized it was that large. But we finally were able to get the mining permit released from the state. That's why we never could use it as long as the mining permit was there. So we were able to get that handled, and we're already going through some designs out there. That's going to be a large park. I mean, that could even turn into some kind of regional park at some point.
Wow.
Yeah, so good stuff going on there.
Well, with all the upgrades and all the money that you're putting into recreation, obviously there's a need for it. So what's driving that need is more participants. So what's the number of youths participating in sports this year compared to last year's number?
So just to give you kind of somewhat of, you know, an area, back in 2021, as far as spring baseball, softball, we had around 868 kids. This past year, 2024, we had just shy of 1,200.
Wow.
And we expect that number to continue to climb. Another big area we had increase in is spring volleyball. We had 119 in 2021. We had 366 turnout in 2024. And as I previously said, one of the line items that used to not be there is lacrosse. We had 51 kids sign up for lacrosse. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's really grown in the last 3 years in that area.
Definitely.
Even our senior citizen participation in 2022 was a little over 1,000. 2023, it was just shy of 1,500. So all age groups, we're seeing a large increase.
That's good. That's good. Which one of those projects coming up are you most excited about in the recreation?
I know this will be a politician answer here, but one of my main pushes when I ran, I wanted to promote communication directly with the citizens, and I wanted to help promote recreation, which I knew at the time when Mr. Clarence Morgan was in his role as director, I mean, that was not a problem, but I always wanted to help be a proponent of recreation. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see all of it. You know, it's been interesting. One thing that's frustrating as an elected official is it takes a long time for things to happen. And as I said earlier, since I got in office 10 years ago, we've been talking about Atlas Sand Project. Yeah. well, now we're finally here, but we can start actually doing something. It took time, but it's been interesting to see that shape up. Same with Clarence Morgan ballpark. You know, we talked about that for a long time. The county was looking at areas to purchase property on that. We could never find enough property to buy. So, because we knew the vision we had, we knew we wanted around, you know, 100 acres. And we bought a first tract of 75 acres from Bank of Newington. Then we purchased another piece from Mr. Larry Redman. And then we purchased, I think, a 15-acre parcel from Ron. I cannot remember her name. It was Theron Ron's daughter, I believe. But I cannot remember her name. But so we ended up, we were able to put those three tracts together. But again, that took time. So if we would have rushed into it, we might have made a quick decision and would not have ended up with the Clarence Morgan ballpark. But that's turned out really nice. So really excited about all of them. One park I did forget is Pine Oreh. We've got
got disc golf coming out there.
Disc golf coming out there. And one thing that's frustrating is to watch what we had happen on McCall Ballpark. Roger Burdett, Commissioner for District 2, pushed for that. We did upgrade. We had some citizen donation. We had some private donations from companies. And I think, and the county had to put some money in as well. I think altogether, I think it was around $350,000.
Wow.
That's a nice park. Every time I ride by there, there's people there. But we've had some serious vandalizing activity going on there. And it's just disheartening when we put money into an area, we make it good, and then people just tear it up.
You're right, Jamie. That was a really political answer. It was long, and you didn't answer his question about what's your favorite. While I've stolen the mic, I want to commend our commissioners. I've noticed a lot of action on the bike trail path plans and what we're doing moving forward for alternative forms of transportation. If you're not on the county's Facebook page, get on there and answer those surveys. That information, I mean, it's vital for these kind of projects. The bike path through Guyton and the High-Low Trail, but the fact that you guys are working on it and looking for a countywide plan, that means a lot to me as someone with kids, as someone who uses his bike in the town and in the county and would love to see that expanded upon.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Russ. That has been a good project. It will be a good project, but again, that was something that is, as you know, is taking a while to get here.
I joked with Mary Charles Howard, who runs the Georgia High-Low Trail, and when she pitched the idea for that originally, I said, well, great, maybe they'll be able to roll me down it in my wheelchair whenever we get it finished. And she's like, that's a real negative way. And it's like, well, I've been in government a year now. I know how long these things take. But if you don't start them, they don't finish. And
exactly.
The recreation stuff in the county is next level. Y'all are really doing good work.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
And, you know, like any project, we all know this costs money. So on the topic of money, what is the county's current financial position?
Quick answer is we are very sound financially. And I'll try not to bore everybody that's listening too much. But there was just a few key points that I wanted to make. One is our fund balance. And that is basically our excess that we put in reserves. I believe as of today, we've got close to $30 million in our fund balance, in excess. And that has continued to grow. And so saying that, you know, a taxpayer can push back on us and say, well, you're not using our tax dollars to the best of their ability. Because why? Our taxes are made to spend and do something with. So with that being said, all of these projects that we've been talking about, just with recreation, we have in the year 2025, we will have $150 million worth of projects going on between water, sewer, recreation, and roads. So we've known for probably the last 5 years that a time was coming where we were going to need that reserve. So the next 2 years, that fund balance amount will be coming down to help fund some of these projects that is much needed. Another metric I wanted to hit on is our current ratio. And the current ratio, that's a financial measurement that shows the entity's ability to meet short-term obligations. Things like payroll, accounts payable, current year debt service payments, operating expenses. And so it's current assets divided by current liabilities. So probably what may stick out to your rule of thumb, any entity with a ratio of 2.0 or higher is what we're looking at. So the last 5 years, we've ranged anywhere from 6.2 to 4.2. Our last audited financial shows we had a current ratio of 4.2. So as I said previously, you always want 2.0 or higher. So definitely look good there. Debt service to revenues ratio, you always want to be under 20%. Last 5 years, we were from 2 to 11%. It jumped up 9% in 2022, and last year, 2023. That is because we've had some bond referendums with T-SPLOST and SPLOST. So even though the SPLOST and T-SPLOST debt service is paid for by the penny sales tax, it still has to be added into that equation. So even though that that ratio rose, it doesn't show the true picture. So part of that percentage is being paid by 1% penny sales tax. So we're looking really good there. As I said, capital projects, last 5 years, our largest jump will be this next year. It'll be just shy of $150 million. General fund expenditures ranged anywhere, operating expenses ranged anywhere from $28 million to $44 million. And one thing I like to point out to people is government entities are not immune to inflation either. We feel the same pain on our projects. We've had some projects where we've had to just a fire station, we've had to rebid it 3 times to try to get a more competitive rate because I think a lot of people are busy, which, hey, that's great. And sometimes I don't know if they just send us a quote just to see what we'll do. But when we start pushing back, we notice that a lot of times those quotes will come down. Let's see. That's pretty much the short of it is we're doing really good. I mean, we've got a high reserve. As the county continues to grow, I mean, our expenses will continue to grow. One thing I will touch on here, since we're talking about finances, is 2 years ago, we lowered our millage rate, and we lowered our county M&O rate, which is what we control. That doesn't have anything to do with the school board or anything outside of that. But some people say their tax bills didn't go down. Some say they still went up. But we cannot control property value. There's state law that will not allow the taxing authority to be the assessing authority, because obviously that would be conflict of interest.
Right.
So we tried to lower it, and real estate market has been really high the last few years, continues to be high. I know I've been talking to people here this last week who are going through the appeals process on their taxes. I know that started. But just wanted to throw that in there that we've tried to help out, and but we can't control the real estate market, how values are assessed.
Right.
As a property owner, I'll tell you that bringing down that millage rate consistently has been incredibly helpful for the county. I mean, it's one of those things that Linda McDaniel had to explain it to me when I started working in office, of how do I explain this in a way that folks get. And there's some serious risks to having underassessed property. If your house is valued at $200,000 and they assess it at $100,000, well, when the hurricane comes or the catastrophic event, they're going to want to replace it with a, quote, $100,000 house. These assessments are necessary. I mean, And it's not really a bad thing that our property's worth more than it was last year. I mean, yeah. That's a positive in a lot of ways. Is it frustrating to pay that tax? Yeah, it's frustrating to pay any tax. But of course, at the same time, we needed to operate sheriff's department, jail, all the county services. And I think y'all have done an excellent job with those resources and seeing the ability to say, look, we don't have to take as big a piece of the pie. Consistently, y'all have done that year after year, and it's appreciated by the county.
Thank you.
Now, with District 3 being the most rural area of the county, it's been a task to service the area with broadband. How's that going?
Yeah, we've recently made some strides there with broadband. And what we did is we ran a line from Springfield up to Clio, right up Highway 119. And we've run it, we're partnering with Planners. They're running fiber optics, and it's going to the fire station in Clio, and then we're running a line down Fair Street to the community center there. Mm-hmm. And the thought process behind that was, during the shelter in place with COVID, I got a lot of calls from parents and grandparents where their kids did not have internet connection. Well, they would get home from work, load their kids or grandkids up, have to drive them back to Springfield so they would have a hotspot to be able to log on to their laptops to do their homework.
Yeah.
And that was something I never thought of till I started getting the calls. So I really appreciate the Board of Commissioners unanimous support on that. We did get some grant money. We had to come out of pocket with some, but the key was we had to get that main line up there. And Planners has identified four other routes that will bring in a certain amount of homes that makes it work for their system. So we're going to continue going after the grants. We want to get additional lines throughout the Clio area and expand that. And so far the commissioners have been supportive of it, and I really appreciate their help on trying to get that done.
Do you have a timeline of completion on that?
The last I heard, I believe in the next few months, the current line is supposed to be done. I know they're still working on it currently.
Right.
I recently found out from our county manager, Tim Callanan, that he has identified another partner that we had currently did some work with, and they have experience writing federal grants. So I think we'll be able to pull them in to help us work with Planners to hopefully get some additional federal funding going forward and hopefully get some more of those lines in place.
Good. And we understand that y'all have had some recent hires for project managers and communication personnel. Can you tell us some of those positions and the people that are in those positions?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, we've got pretty much this upcoming year about $150 million in capital projects. And that's water, sewer, recreation, and roads. So kind of Tim Callanan, our county manager, he was kind of one of our main project managers, wearing a hat. So besides the day-to-day activities he has, he was spending a lot of time keeping up with that. And I don't know how he did it. At any time, I could call him just about on any project, ask him any question, he could answer any questions.
Yeah.
And we knew at some point that really wasn't a good program because we didn't want him to get burned out. And so at one of our previous retreats, we had talked with him about, hey, why don't you bring in some more help? So he has hired Jeremiah Steele. And if I remember correctly, I think Jeremiah will be helping kind of on our vertical projects, on our buildings.
Uh-huh.
Trey Wilkins, he was previously with T&H, and his specialty, I believe, was kind of with water and sewer. So he's going to try to go after those, help out with those projects. And we may decide we have to hire additional people. But one thing, the taxpayers have been supportive. They've given us the penny sales tax with SPLOST and T-SPLOST. It's given us options, and that is a very big part of the positive numbers I was talking about previously on our finances. that is a big help to where we don't have to dip in and use other money for some of these projects.
Right.
So, so with that being said, we understand we've got the money, we've gotten the votes for SPLOST and T-SPLOST. So now, you know, we need to deliver. So we're trying to do that and get more people here that can help us get it down the line.
Well, Commissioner DeLuge, thank you so much for coming on the show and keep us updated.
Okay.
We want to continue to hear the positive things our county's doing.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Now let's move on to our county clerk, Ms. Stephanie Johnson. Ms. Johnson, how are you today?
Good afternoon, Mr. Tommy. Thank you so much, you and Frank, for what you do here and for having me today.
Thank you for being here with us. Give us a little information about yourself. Let us get to know Ms. Stephanie Johnson.
Okay, so Ms. Stephanie Johnson has been with Effingham County for over 25 years.
Wow.
In my current capacity for over 11. For about 25 years, I have resided in Commissioner DeLoach's district.
Okay.
I am a state county certified clerk and an internationally certified municipal clerk.
Wow.
And I am born and raised right here in Effingham.
Awesome. So what is your role as county clerk?
So, how do we sum that up? So I'll say basically the role is to act as a records custodian, if you will, an archivist or historian of all documentation that is approved by the Board of Commissioners, in part.
Okay. So what are some of your other responsibilities as county clerk?
Other responsibilities is agenda management. So in order for the Board of Commissioners to have an agenda, my office puts together that agenda, which includes items for their consideration. One big piece is open records requests. I am the records custodian for the county, so they all come to me.
I bet you stay busy with open records requests, especially now compared to probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Absolutely.
It seems like it's a popular thing for people to do these days from what I see on social media.
It is a very popular thing. I would say on any given day, we get anywhere from 20 to 30 open records requests.
Oh my gosh, that's a full-time job right there.
It is.
Just doing that. Now, is it just you or do you have an assistant?
I do have an assistant, a young lady by the name of Tashina Shiggs. She's coming up the ranks rather well.
Okay. Possibly when you get ready to retire, she'll take the reins?
Yes, that's the hope.
What was most appealing that made you want to apply for this position?
That sounds like a loaded question.
That's a very loaded question. Because in all honesty, initially, I wasn't sure about applying. I actually received a call back in June of 13 asking for my assistance in the clerk's office on an interim basis. And during that time, again, I wasn't sure that I wanted to put my name in the hat.
Yeah.
But then I looked beyond Stephanie and thought about what I could do in that capacity for our citizenry.
Wow.
So that was the driver.
Well, what previous position or experience did you have that you think helps you in that role as county clerk?
So prior to becoming clerk, I was on the planning and zoning and building side.
Mm-hmm.
So also I was secretary for the planning board as well. So some of those functions are similar to what I do in the clerk's office. The development side, learned about zoning, did site plan reviews, development plan reviews. So all of that goes hand in hand with what I do in my current capacity.
What do you enjoy most about your position as county clerk, other than ORRs, obviously?
No, yeah, other than open records requests. So not just because one commissioner is sitting here, but working with the board that I have has been absolutely wonderful. I have to commend them on their abilities to talk through issues and agree to disagree. We have a very good board. On top of that, just being in a place where I can be accessible and answer questions for our citizens in the community.
you know, I'll have to agree with you on that board. I have met, I didn't know any of the commissioners until probably around April or May. So what is that? 6-7 months. I've got to know each and every one of them. And I feel like I've known them forever. Yeah. And they're very approachable. They're easy to talk to. So I see where you're coming from with that, with the current board.
They are. They work very hard. Public does not realize that. I know that they lose sleep at night on some of the issues that they have to address. I know that personally. So. Yes.
And you got to remember this current board we have here, they pay taxes just like we do on property.
Absolutely.
So they feel that pain that we all feel. They're going through it.
Absolutely.
So, okay. What is one of the biggest misconceptions that the general public has about the county clerk position?
And it's sitting right next to me right now in Walt. So there is this huge misconception of what the county clerk does and what the clerk of Superior Court does. Obviously, my position is on a legislative level. Commissioner, I was going to call you a commissioner. Walt's position is on the judicial level. He deals more with deeds and things of that nature, recording on that side. My job functions are that of the board of commissioners. He deals with judges and things of that level. So, yeah, that's the biggest misconception, is the understanding of who the county clerk is and who the Superior Court clerk is.
Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up with us, Nell. You know, giving us a definition. Hopefully that'll help the public with that. It seems sometimes the public may not understand what's going on in the county government level. How important is it for the public to stay educated, and what are some things that can be done to better educate the public?
It is extremely important that the public is educated. What we can do, and I say this to some commissions often is that we have to first be accountable to say what it is we can do as an organization to educate the public better. And the things that I've identified is obviously our social media platforms, maybe just putting any information out there. Did you know? Such as TSBLOCKS, for instance. Most people don't know what that acronym is for, and most people don't understand that those funds can only be used for roads and they can't be used for other things. So it's extremely important.
Absolutely. Our county does an outstanding job with transparency. I think so. It's almost as if it's a focal point to do that. Can you explain how important it is to show transparency?
Again, extremely important. I think it builds trust with the community when they know everything that is going on.
What message would you like to convey to the audience as far as getting engaged and staying engaged with local government?
Very respectfully, audience. Again, with much respect, I will say be a part of the solution rather than the problem.
It's perfect.
Be very intentional about educating yourself before sharing information.
Perfect. Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephanie Johnson, thank you so much for joining us, and keep up the great work over there at the county office.
It is
You're
my
very
pleasure.
Much appreciated.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Mr. Russ Dean, I just want to say before we get started here, you know, I had an awesome time chatting with you last night, passing ideas back and forth, sharing stories. I found out that you know a lot more about Guyton than I know, and you know a lot more about Guyton than I thought you did. You know, Craig Johnson likes to tag himself Mr. Springfield, and so I'm going to argue that you're Mr. Guyton, because talking to you and listening to you, you know so much about the Guyton and the history of Guyton, and you wear so many different hats there, and you know, I'm just going to say right out the gate, I'm thankful for everything that you've done for the Guyton community, because I've seen the difference that you made with being on the board of the Y and your service to as mayor. But I want to talk about some of these hats that you wear. Let's start with the Guyton Pet Lodge. Tell us a little bit about the Guyton Pet Lodge.
Excellent. 20 years ago, and thanks guys for having me on the show. 20 years ago, my wife and I, actually, I started it, and then she and I got married. But we've been operating in Guyton for 21 years. We board dogs and cats. We've done a few different things, grooming, training, daycare. But right now, we're primarily focused on boarding. When people go out of town, when people need a place to hotel their pets, that's what we do. And we love it. It's a great job. We can't imagine a world where we haven't been playing with everyone in the county's dogs for the last 20 years.
So what kind of pets do you accommodate?
Dogs and cats.
Dogs and cats, nothing else?
I used to do exotics, lizards and birds and all that, and after a few litters of hamsters and a couple of rabbits that the customer couldn't understand why I wouldn't let them play in the yard, and what part of my physique says I'm as fast as a rabbit. So we got out of doing anything but dogs and cats. It was the predominant need anyway.
What is your hours of operation?
We're Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and Sunday afternoons, 3 to 5.
Okay.
But really, when it comes to care, it's 24/7. I mean, we live on site. Staff members start walking dogs at 6:30 in the morning and usually don't finish up till 8:30 at night. Those staff members are often Amanda and I, so, yeah. And sometimes the kids. But.
And by the way, I won't take my dogs anywhere but to the Guyton Pet Lodge.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Those are like my babies, and Rustine is the only lodge I would leave them with.
So, when you got the dogs and cats there, how do you group them? Is it by temperament, by size? How do you do that?
We're set up on kind of a need basis. So we've got 3 yards in the facility. We've got a large gravel yard that's attached to our medical area, where if dogs have specific needs, special anxiety issues, they're typically in there. We do social play, but we do solo play. The cats have their own cat room completely separate from the dogs. But a lot of it's based on size and temperament. So small dogs with small dogs, big dogs with big dogs, and if you don't get along with anybody, well, then you get to be by yourself. But everyone gets the same amount of play time out. Averages 4 to 5 walks a day. So we're really big on that.
So what's the daily routine for a pit there?
We start at 6:30. Dogs get out and have a potty break. They get breakfast, put them up, start again with play groups and outside times. Cycles on through until there's dinner time, and then one final walk before we bed them all down. I really focus on play. Outside time with the dogs, if you can wear them out, it's just like kids at camp.
Yeah,
it's like kids at camp. If you can wear them out, they're going to sleep good that night, and they're not going to be missing mama.
Mm-hmm. So how many staff members do you have there?
We have 6 right now with myself and my wife.
Okay. What are your vaccination requirements for the pets?
Dogs require distemper, parvo, lepto. They need to have their rabies and their bordetella. The cats require an annual feline booster and their rabies booster. We like them to have the feline leukemia.
What procedures do you have in place for like emergencies or medical issues?
We have an excellent relationship with the vets in this county. Most of them will take my calls, sometimes even after hours. But if for some reason we can't get your vet, we then move on to a different vet who we know and trust. And if for some reason they're unavailable, we're fortunate to have the New River Emergency Clinic right across in South Carolina. It's been an excellent addition to our area. A lot of folks don't know about it, but as far as running somewhere with an actual genuine pet emergency, they've got exceptional doctors and exceptional staff. I've been pleased both times I've had to take a dog there.
That's good. That's good. How do you handle pets with special needs or medications?
Medications, we have our own medication room where everything is documented, kept up with, kept separate from all the pets in little tiny cubbies so we can keep up with it. One of our customers once said, "Wow, we do the same thing at the nursing home." And I was like, "It's kind of the same. Hopefully you don't get bit as often as I do." But it's more about tracking and having good staff who's paying attention, who's reading it. And one of them made a note years back. I typed up a medicine mistakes kills, and she was about the third employee who'd seen that in our room, and she goes, "You misspelled medicine." And I was like, "Ooh," which was a lesson in and of itself. it's like yeah, you got to pay attention to it, look at it, read it, and know what you're doing.
You know, I'm trying to envision what these dogs and cats are doing during the day, so I'm going to ask this question. What kind of exercise and play areas do you have for them?
Yeah, the 3 big yards for the dogs, we of course don't let any cats out. That's just an accident waiting to happen. They've got their own cat room. We try to encourage some outside in the room for them, some one-on-one affection time with a staff member, but the dogs entertain themselves. The secret for dog care and making them happy, we'll have customers walk in, the dogs are pulling them to get to the back, and they're like, what's your secret? What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm like that grandma from the 80s who was like, get in the yard, go play in the yard. And they do. I mean, we've got a big, large grass yard where they go out, I mean, squirrels and who knows what's walked through that day, and I mean, nose to the ground, but they entertain themselves. They wanted their social creatures.
Mm-hmm. So how do you manage like feeding schedules and dietary restrictions?
Everyone brings their own food, and that is cut back a lot. About 15 years ago, we realized that feeding kennel food is only for emergencies. But you don't want dogs to get sick on your watch. They're already a little stressed because it's not home. Yeah. So everything in that same vein is documented, kept in a container next to their run, and then fed on their schedule. So we aim to recreate what you do at home as closely as
right,
possible.
Right. Sounds fun. What is the price structure and what does it include?
Cats are $29 a day. We provide litter, beds, blankies. You're welcome to bring anything from home you'd like, but once again, food. For dogs, it's based on weight. So under 30 pounds is $46 a day. Over 30 pounds, under 100 pounds is $52 a day. And over 100 pounds is $58 a day. We offer a multiple pet discount. So if you're bringing two pets, we're knocking $10 off a day. We understand more pets, more money, and we would try to make that easy for the customer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to move on to the Beulah House. That's a beautiful house, by the way.
Thank
I haven't
you.
Been in it yet, but I do want to go over there and check it out at some point. And, you know, I've seen the pictures that y'all been putting up on Facebook. It looks amazing in there. And I've seen the menu that y'all have coming out at your next event. Looks awesome. So just tell us, for all the people listening out there, tell us a little bit about the Beulah House.
So Beulah House is an event and members venue. We host events there. We've had a wedding. We've had some baby showers. We've got a lot of Christmas parties planned for companies and stuff, but it's also a members venue where we're hoping to have memberships to the club, basically, where your membership's going to keep the house in good standing order, which is not a cheap deal with an 1884 build. I mean, Dr. Willie Todd made the house kind of famous in Effingham County. She was a matriarch of Guyton, local historian and professor at Georgia Southern, but everyone who grew up in Guyton has a Dr. Willie Todd house story. Everyone who went to the tour of homes can remind you that she had real candles on her Christmas tree, and you're like, yeah, in this house, I get goosebumps thinking about it. It's like, it's a miracle it's still here. But at the same time, she did so much for historical preservation in the county and in the city. And so it was kind of mine, and I'm not the only one in this. Amanda and I are also partners with Jennifer and Marshall Reeser on this project. We've had a lot of charter members join. And so that membership has things like you're talking about, the meals. We're doing monthly meals with caterers and chefs from our local area. My brother's catered one, Dean's Cooking out of Sylvania. We've had Sated Spoon there in November, and they will also be doing our Christmas meal. But that information is available on Facebook. Please look it up. But we're having a lot of fun. Usually those meals are around 50 people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of our max. We want it to be comfortable and small.
Yeah.
But at the same time, bring in folks from all over the community.
Right. So inside the house, do you have different spaces available, or can they be used simultaneously, or is it just a dining room?
The house is, once again, it's an 1884 original build where they added on. They added a kitchen at one point. They added big enclosed sun porches and a library. So it kind of grew as Dr. Todd was living there and before her. There's numerous spaces in the house for different purposes. That you can easily sit 30 people in one little area, which includes like the bar room and the main dining room, if you were going to try to do a small ceremony inside.
Mm-hmm.
For a meal, we can seat more than 50 if you're using other areas and portions of the house. But it's beautiful. It's kind of different in terms of the different venues I've seen. Like Woodlawn has its beautiful outdoor area and a lot of the green space, and it's kind of farm-based, with the pole barn and all, and the gardens. Beulah is kind of in-city. You're dealing with like a Victorian-style classic home that's older. Lots of the original woodwork, lots of the original builds. There's some pocket doors in there that were from the original house that they're just gorgeous.
All
and
right,
you can see a million little pinholes where Dr. Todd always decorated for Christmas. And But and then you've got newer venues like Stillwell Pines here, which are great. I mean, all air conditioned, all inside, a lot of opportunity for outside stuff. So Effingham County's really been blessed here in the last 5 years with venues and things to accommodate all the needs of who are looking for things out here.
So do you have like a bid package, discounts for certain days?
Renee Peterson is our event and member coordinator, and she could answer that question so much better than me. I will say that we do have what's called a wedding weekend package, where one of the things that makes Beulah different is we have the ability to have 8 people stay overnight. So if you're looking to keep all the bride and bridesmaids in one place, or maybe the groom's family wants to stay in one place, that's part of it. It's all included in that. We've got the outside yards and a nice wooded area. It's a very large lot for inside a city, and it's right there next to Guyton United Methodist Church, adjacent to a few other local churches. So it could be an excellent venue for after a church wedding, or the one wedding we've had, which was their venue was damaged in Hurricane Helene, and they're like, we've got caterers, we've got all these people lined up, florists, everything's set to go. And so we were fortunate enough to kind of give them a rescue rate and let them have it there, and it was great. It also taught us a lot about our venue. I mean, we've only been open a few months, and you're always learning. You're always trying to figure out how do you make this the best experience for a new bride, a new groom, or even a family reunion, a retirement party.
Yeah.
All of these things have been talked about by members.
Right. One more thing about the Beulah House. Do y'all provide the tables and chairs and linens, or is that something that...
We have a set amount of tables and chairs, linens, and things that are on site that can be used and are included with our package for weddings, for most events. We're about the base fees. Like, we don't want to put a lot of tack-ons here and there. I mean, you should know what you're paying, why you're paying it, and what it's going to. And our main goal, if your goal is to make money, do not buy a house built in 1884. But if your goal is to build something that you hope outlasts you, I think that's what Beulah House will do.
Good. So, I mean, obviously those are two excellent businesses that you're running, but even with the little bit of time you got left outside of that, you're now dedicating that to the community, to the filling house. I mean, excuse me, filling station. So a lot of people out there don't know what a filling station is. I'm familiar with it. Can you let everybody that's listening out there know what the filling station is?
The filling station is in the old Effingham Middle School on 119. It's a food pantry, and I got to know this through our church, Guyton Christian Church, and members of it. And the people there that work are next level. Miss Bobby Sechich has been running it as long as I've been involved. And just last month, they helped over 1,000 individuals, over 300 families, gave out 19,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
All of this is need-based. And it's one of those things that you see a group of individuals genuinely changing their community for the better just by donating time, resources, and money. And those funds, when I tell you Bobby can stretch a dollar, you don't know anyone that can stretch a dollar like her. It's unbelievable to see a semi-truck full of groceries come in and her say, well, that was about $1,200. And when I say semi, I mean a full semi full of pallet-loaded groceries. And I'm like, can I shop? No.
So tell us a little bit about food insecurity.
Nationwide, food insecurity is a problem. And, of course, everyone's going to shut their ears off at this point because it's not something we want to think about, especially if we're not suffering from it. But 1 in 6 kids goes to bed hungry. And that's something in the industrialized world, in a country as wealthy as we are, should not be a problem anymore.
Yeah.
We are tasked to feed his sheep. We are tasked to make the world better, and this is just one of those things where people are really putting forth their time and resources. And if you do it in a program like this, like Manna House, like Backpack Buddies, these programs that already exist, your resources or your volunteer time with those programs can move mountains. One of our long-term guys, he always unloads freezers with me, and we were talking, and I said, what brought you here? I said, you're always here, you do this work. And he goes, 8 years ago, I lost my job, and I needed a power bill paid, and then I needed another one paid. He said, and Miss Bobby and her church stepped up, paid the bills, and he said, what do you need? And he said, do you need auto mechanic work? That's what I do. She said, I need someone to help me unload trucks and fill bags and make this more efficient. He's been there every time I've been there for the last 5 or 6 years I've been helping out. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those things where they paid probably $600 worth of power bills, which led this man to donate thousands of hours of time.
Yeah.
And do good in community. So never underestimate what a small act, coming up there and filling a bag. When I think about these people, I think about some that have left us, which is also why I'm pitching the fill-in station to people. We need volunteers. Sandra Kelly was a member of our church who was always there, offloading trucks, filling up bags with meat, and getting things ready. And Frank and I realized last night we both knew someone we didn't know was Mr. John Sheridan, who was a fantastic volunteer. We've got a little memorial area for our fallen comrades, I guess you'd say. And I got to know him well there and did not know his effects outside of the filling station, but apparently it was just one of many things he did.
Oh, absolutely. He was, I'm in a supper club Wednesday nights, Mr. Ricky Neidlinger's, and I sat beside John for 2 years, you know, every Wednesday night, and I listened to all his stories, of course, about the filling station. And I would always see him downtown Springfield driving his golf cart. He always made his rounds. And he just always had the most warming stories. And it was motivational. You could tell him what was going on in your life, and he would just, you know, build you up. He was just one of those people with just a good soul. And, you know, I'll never forget when I got the call that he had suffered an accident with his tractor and had passed away. And it got us. And, you know, we went there and met his family and everything. Found out that he was a really, really great person, had a really great family. And I miss him a lot, I really do. Back to the filling station. How does people get help from the filling station?
So the filling station, if you are dealing with food insecurity, if you don't have enough food for your family, you can go direct to it Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 1. Someone there on site will help you fill out any necessary forms. It's not super invasive. It's just a matter of making sure there's a genuine need. And making sure that we're providing enough need for as many people as we can. Unfortunately, some folks go into it as how much can I hoard, how much can I double dip. It's not common, and it's not something that's a real genuine problem. It's just something that we're on the lookout for. We work with United Way. If you're dealing with any kind of issue in your personal life, if you're dealing with a financial issue, a medical issue, they've got connections to the Two Rivers Health Clinic. We are very blessed in this county to have an excellent amount of individuals who are working, organizations who are working, and churches who are working together to provide for people who just need. The only real hole we've got in the county in the area is something for, and I plug this only because it needs to be said, individual men who have issues, mental issues, are homeless. There is nothing for them right now. I don't know who might hear this in the community that says this is a need I want to work on, but it's a definite need. Mm-hmm. It's one that every city and the county deals with, the sheriff's office, the police departments deal with, and there's no good answer for it. So if you're listening, you've got an answer, now's the time to come forward, and I'd be happy to help.
Mm-hmm. I got one last question for you, and I know we went back and forth about me asking you this question, and so I'm gonna go ahead and ask it to you. Are you ever going to get back in politics?
You gave me plenty of time to rehearse a very politician answer. In fact, I could let Jamie answer for me. No. When I graduated college, I told myself a few things. I was like, I'm not moving back to Effingham County. Not going home. And I'm never going to be like my parents and run a small business. I'm going to get a real person job. And I'm going to go work for someone else. I'm going to like have a retirement and be normal. And the other one was, I'm never going into politics. And because I just learned, I mean, political science degree, I'd learned how the system worked to the best of my ability then. But now I look at it and it's like, tell God your plans. So I won't rule out running for something in the future. If I see a need, I like to fill it. I like to problem solve. And it's neat to sit here with two individuals who work with the county. I worked with both of them in my time as mayor and thoroughly enjoyed the amount of help Stephanie gave me. Over and over again, there were numerous phone calls of, hey, everything's on fire. How do I do this? And she was just a godsend. Jamie as well really went above and beyond answering questions and helping me learn the difference between small business owner and city official, because it's a different arena, and you really have to be in it to learn what it means and what it takes to do. But I wouldn't rule it out. I like to serve.
Okay, Ms. Pauline, we want to kind of wrap up the session here with you and Walt on the updates with the parade. I know we've had a couple meetings outside of this room on the parade itself. Can you kind of give us some updates on what's going on with the parade?
Sure. First, I want to thank Jamie for bringing up Leadership Effingham. That was a changing experience for myself in having the navigators and going, and I learned so much, but I also was able to teach a lot to others about the need for those with disabilities in our community. So I encourage anyone that if you want to get involved, go through that program, because it is a wonderful program. And second, I want to say, Russ, if that trail is accessible for you in a wheelchair, I'm all for it, buddy. Because I believe in accessibility, and everybody in a wheelchair should be able to access that trail too.
Preach.
But yeah, I think the parade is going great. A lot of excitement that I've heard, you know, throughout the community. I first want to thank you and Tommy for you know, spearheading this and getting it going. And I think it's just going to bring, it is laying the groundwork for years and years and years of inclusion and educating and just getting the word out there. And just today I was able to ask Walt about his two boys riding in the car with me, which is Mr. Clarence's grandsons. And I told April, I said, it makes me feel like Mr. Clarence. I got a part of Mr. Clarence here with me. Because the one thing about Mr. Clarence, you know, he never asked why. He said, why not? You know, and that's what we need to do. Why not have a parade that's lighted?
Yeah.
You know, why not?
Yeah.
And why not have the whole community out there supporting it? And I just think it's wonderful that our community, our school systems, our county commissioners, you know, our small municipalities, you know, and just groups in general are wanting to support the navigators. And I cannot thank this county enough. I was not born and bred here, like Miss Stephanie, but I can't think of a better place to call home than Effingham County.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
That's great. Walt, you know, first of all, congratulations on your election as Effingham County Clerk of Courts. You know, I went to a lot of your debates, and I saw that you got asked a lot of tough questions. And I got a tough question for you. And just to add a little pressure to it, there are some children and some faculty of Ebenezer that are listening in on this, and they really want to hear what you got to say.
Okay.
What is going on in Springfield, downtown Springfield, specifically Laurel Street, with this Grinch character?
Real quick, before I answer that question, you know, it's funny that Russ brought up Tell God Your Plan and just watch him laugh. 4 years ago, I lost the first election by 28 votes in a runoff. And unless you've been in politics, man, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And to be in that situation, it was heartbreaking. And when I was talking to my mom and dad about it, you know, I said 4 years ago, I said the only time I would ever run again for anything is if it's, you know, I felt like God was leading me in that direction. And my mom, being mom, she said, son, are you sure you want to do that? She said, I saw the toll it took on you the first time. And I said, Mom, I said, I don't know why. I said, I've prayed about this for a long time. And win or lose, I just feel like it's the path that the Lord is sending me down. And I said, either way, I'm good with the outcome. But I feel like he's using me for something. We were fortunate enough to win, and I don't know where this ride's going to take me, but I do feel like it's a path the Lord's leading me down. And my mom, when I told her that, she said, I have chills. She said, you know, I'm okay with it if you've prayed about it and you feel like it's what God's leading you to do. So it's funny, you know, 4 years ago, God, I'm done with this, and he laughed at me.
Well, just so you know, we all believe in you, and we think you're going to do a great job.
Well,
so,
thank you.
And a year from now, just remember, you actively ran for this job. You didn't just ask for it or apply. You worked your butt off to get where you're going, and you'll be like, I wanted this.
good thing I'm already bald. But to get to Springfield, so of course I'm still at the sheriff's office. Been there 12 years now, and I was talking to Sheriff McDuffie the other day, and it seems we've had some sightings.
That's right.
Around the city the last couple of weeks of this not so pretty green creature running around. They call it a Grinch. So I've talked with Sheriff McDuffie, Chief Bush, and Captain Husala. And so we're going to up the patrol a little bit over the next couple weeks, few weeks, until Christmas. And if he wants to try any of his shenanigans, you know, we've got extra patrol to see if we can put a stop to it.
Good. We appreciate that. And FNM Talks has been informed that there are some photos that are going to be released throughout the next couple days. And we'll, of course, be turning those over to y'all so y'all can do what y'all need to do. I'm hoping that once you catch him, you can take him over there to Russ's and he can throw him in one of the little pins over there.
Yeah, he's covered in fur, but he's going to be the big dog rate. So he's 58 a night. I might need you to take him by Guyton Animal Hospital or Effingham and get his shots up to date.
Get his shots, definitely. And
we don't tolerate biters.
And I did ask the sheriff if we needed, could we tase him to take him into custody, but I think he said we need to try that as a last resort.
Right.
But at least it's good to know you can use it if you need
There you go.
That's right. And maybe we can work with Jamie and the commissioners of maybe getting you some reimbursement for his time there. You know,
that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think all the taxpayers would like to jump in on catching the Grinch. Okay, we want to end this episode with something special for Thanksgiving. So I know y'all have all done this at one time in your life. We will go around the table, and I just want to hear what everybody's thankful for today, and that's how we're going to end it out. So we'll start with you, Jamie.
I would say most thankful for my family. That's really important, and in all the hats that I do wear, I wouldn't be able to do what I do without the support of my family. So that's really my backbone, and I'm grateful for that.
See, now this isn't fair because you let Jamie go first, and now my wife's going to be like, well,
now we're
Jamie,
all the same thing.
No, you got to switch up. So I'm going to steal church. Ha ha ha. No, I'm blessed at Guyton Christian Church to have a very strong church family who've been supportive through my good times and bad times when I served as mayor, as my businesses have grown in the area, and through, most importantly, my walk. And it's not something that you're always successful with. We're all going to fall. We're all going to falter. But at the same time, every time I have, there's been someone there to pick me up. And they are a blessing with my family. It took my kids in as one of their own. It's fun to play music every Sunday night, and we have a gospel jam, and both my kids get to play. I mean, with a lot of folks who are in their 60s and 70s, and some in their 80s, but it's fun to watch a 10-year-old musician play with an 80-year-old and them just have the best time. So I'm really blessed by my church.
Oh, this is a loaded question, because I'm telling you, God has blessed me moving here to Effingham. But what started my journey, and the thing I think I'm most grateful for, is my daughter Dakota. She's a senior this year, and I recently had to do a senior ad, and I couldn't think of all the words I wanted to say, and I listened to this song called In My Daughter's Eyes. And I'm thankful that I get to see the world through her eyes, because she sees everybody being equal, and she sees life being fair, and she truly, that blessing God gave to me almost 22 years ago saved my life, and she has given me purpose, and she has motivated me on days that I didn't think I could put one in front of the other. And so I am just blessed and beyond grateful for what God has given me in her, and I love her just the way she is, because she is just the way God meant her to be, a testimony for him.
What am I thankful for? God himself, because without him, nothing is possible. I'm grateful for family. I'm thankful for growth, both personally and spiritually. I'm thankful for life and abundance. Like you said earlier, I want to wanted to call you Mayor Dean. Maybe you're going back to that. It's just so important to see others and to hear others. And I want to thank you, that gentleman, and all of you that serve at the filling station, because that is a true example of servant leadership. That is one of the three pillars that I created for myself as a clerk: servant leadership, transparency, and integrity.
That's hard to follow all those up. First of all, I am thankful. You know, sometimes it's the generic answer, but I am thankful for our Lord and Savior and my relationship with Him. Secondly, I'm thankful for my wife, April, and boys, Tyler and Morgan. They seem to follow Dad around on whatever crazy ride I take them on. Matter of fact, they're sitting outside now when we wrap up here. We're going to a end-of-year baseball bowling party. So, and I'm blessed and thankful for just the Lord giving me so many good people in my life. Extended family, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, you know, we're all Effingham's people. My parents, they showed me, you know, growing up, they really showed me what hard work looked like, and they had me in church, and that's today's a huge reason why, you know, my kids and my family, April, and we have them in church. I have my in-laws who have played a huge part in my life. Mr. Clarence, he showed me what it was like to give so much back to the community you love. And that's something that I struggle with on a day-to-day basis, just as human nature, but am I doing enough? So I'm thankful for my family, my Lord and Savior, and just the examples that they have given me along the way.
Man, it's hard to follow up that. I'll have to say I'm thankful that God has put me on the path that He's put me on. I've had some hard times. I've hit some stumps. And I'm thankful He still got me on that path. And you know, I don't know where it's headed. He knows where it's headed. But I think I'm thankful every day I get up that God's still letting me walk that path wherever it's leading. And, you know, I just have faith that it's going to take me where I need to be at the end of the journey.
So I'm not a politic, and I'm not a politician, and I don't consider myself very political, but I have buddies that are political. And so I'm going to give this a shot at this politic thing here. I'm going to say that I'm thankful for Effingham. I'm thankful for all the people in this room. I'm thankful for all the people who have come onto this show and have supported us. You know, opposed to what you may hear out there, Effingham Talk's goal is to bring the community together and bring the goodness of Effingham to the surface, and to try to fend off all the negativity and bring really good people together. And I'll tell you, over the last couple weeks since me and Tommy have started this, you know, one of the things that I've enjoyed hearing and seeing is all the stories, you know.
Yes.
Listening to the people before they come on the show just tell us what's going on, you know, starting with Miss Pauline, you know, then you had, you know, all the other people who come on the show throughout the time. They always have a lot of good stories to share. And, you know, it kind of came all together when I got a phone call. Friday, I got a phone call, and I hope she's listening today because she said she would be. She called me from Ebenezer Middle with the Best Buddy System, and she says, "Listen," she said, "I want to be in a parade." She goes, "But we don't have a trailer." I said, "Okay, but you want to be in a parade?" She goes, "Yes," and I could just tell, you know, the excitement. And her name is Ms. Ivory Brown. I could tell the excitement in her, you know, in her voice. She goes, "Can you see about getting a trailer?" I says, "Yeah." I says, "I'm busy at the moment. Let me give you a call back." 5 minutes later, I called her back, which I had already known. I already had a trailer. So I called her back. I said, "Listen," I said, "I have you a trailer. We're looking for you." And you could just tell the excitement and how excited that she was, and that set of kids were going to be coming in. And those type of stories is when we see what we've done, and we hear those stories, all the negative stuff that we hear out there, we're just like, just go away. You know, if that's all you got to say, then just stay away, because we're going to bring the goodness of Effingham up, and we're going to bring all the people that make Effingham great, and we're going to bring them together, and we're just going to do away with all this negative and hate that seems to be circulating out there. And so, with that, I'm very thankful for Effingham and the great people that we have here. And that's it today. We went a little bit over, but I think we had a lot of good stories and a lot of good information that was shared today. I want to thank each of you that's come on here today, and hope that in the future, y'all will come back. Walt, please. I know we'll be coming back to you later on once you get in office to hear all about the wonders of being a clerk of court.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. All right, guys, that's it. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And y'all have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and rest of the next week. Have a good week next week.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.